Sorry, translation and purport by His Divine Gracious A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Srila Prabhupada Ki. O Madhusudan, because of your appearance, I am becoming more and more anxious in fear of Kamsa. Therefore, please arrange for that sinful Kamsa to be unable to understand that you have taken birth from my womb. Devaki addressed the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Madhusudan. She was aware that the Lord had killed many demons like Madhu, who were hundreds and thousands of times more powerful than Kamsa. Yet because of affection for the transcendental child, she believed that Kamsa could kill him. Instead of thinking of the unlimited power of the Lord, she thought of the Lord with affection, and therefore she requested the transcendental child to appear. Om Jnanati Mirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namom Vishnupadaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschate Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shedvaita Gadadar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Brinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, so I request the blessings of the assembled Vaishnavas that I can speak something useful for everyone concerned. So it's a very nice pastime that we're hearing from at the moment in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki. Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shishi Gornitai ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. So I found this purport interesting, this verse interesting, especially because Devaki is essentially she has a mood of a Dwarkavasi. Devaki and Vasudev reside in Dwarka. And the mood of Dwarka is presided by Aishwarya, awe and reverence. Whereas here we see that she's feeling affection, and Prabhupada points out in the purport that as opposed to feeling that Krishna is a supreme personality of Godhead, is all-powerful, he can defeat any demon, and he's killed and defeated in his many incarnations many, many more demons, much more powerful than Kamsa, still she's fearful and protective over her son. And so this made me reflect that although she has a presiding mood, being a Dwarkavasi, she has a presiding mood of Aishwarya, still affection, some element of affection is there, because number one, Krishna is a child, so it's very natural to have a mood of affection towards a baby. But also because the mood of Aishwarya is unlimitedly superior to the mood of Madhurya, or the mood of affection, of love, is much superior to the mood of Aishwarya. As a child, I watched Ramayana many times, and I read it once as well. And so recently, I was just reflecting on the pastimes of Lord Ram. I think in many classes over the past month, we've been talking a lot about Lord Ram. And I've been thinking also about how I can connect with Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman more. I remember once one devotee asked me, how do you connect with Lord Chaitanya? And I gave two answers. One was, number one was to read CC, to read the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, you can really connect with him. And the second is to preach, to actually fulfill the purport of the CC, to fulfill or help Mahaprabhu fulfill his mission. So then I was reflecting how I can actually connect more with Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman, because of course we have the beautiful deities in our temple. We're very, very fortunate to have that. And as I was hearing more and more about Sitaram, Lakshman, Hanuman, about the wonderful pastimes, I became inspired. So this week I was on Travelling Sankirtan, and after a long day on the streets, a long, nice, blissful day on the streets, I read for a while, and then I thought I'd kick back and watch the Ramayana. I just thought I'd watch the first episode that I could find. And the first episode I came across was the first meeting between Ram and Hanuman. And it was blissful, it was so nice. Very, very beautiful interaction. And the pastime, it begins with Bali and Sugriv. So they're brothers. And they're monkey brothers. Vali's much more powerful than Sugriv, and he's actually the king. Vali is very much into sense gratification, so he actually steals the wife of a very powerful demon called Mayadhanav. So Mayadhanav, of course, he comes to the palace of Vali in Kishkinda, and he calls for him and he says, you know, you monkey king, come, let's have a fight. You've stolen my wife, you're trying to steal my kingdom, let's fight. So Vali, he knows that Mayadhanav is very powerful and it's not going to be an easy fight. So his younger brother Sugriv goes with him. So then they both go together and they agree to fight in a cave. So they go into a cave and Vali tells his younger brother Sugriv, stay outside the cave to make sure that no other demons come in, because some other friends of Mayadhanav may come in order to help him. So you stand guard at the foot of the cave. So Vali and Mayadhanav went into the cave and they were fighting. And a year went by and Sugriv was still waiting. Nothing happened. And he was wondering what's happening. And then suddenly he heard cries. Someone was shouting in pain, in agony. And then he saw blood trickle from out of the cave. And he assumed that his brother had been killed, Vali had been killed. So in order to stop Mayadhanav coming out and causing havoc in Kishkinda and taking over the kingdom, he put a huge rock in front of the cave and returned to the kingdom. And in the absence of Vali, he was crowned the king. So Sugriv became the king, he was sitting on the throne. And then suddenly one day, Vali appears. And he saw Sugriv, he saw his younger brother, and he started cursing him and saying, how dare you take over my kingdom? How dare you, you just wanted me to be killed. You put the rock in front of the cave, and you just wanted to get rid of me so that you could enjoy my opulences. So he started to beat him and almost killed him. And in order to save his life, Sugriv fled. So Sugriv ended up in one place where Vali wasn't able to go because he had received a curse from a rishi, a sage. So I won't go into that because the pastimes of the Lord are unlimited. So Sugriv was hiding out in this place, and Lord Ram was looking for Sugriv because Lord Ram had also lost his kingdom and he had lost his wife. So they had a common grief in life. And Lord Ram knew that he could help Sugriv, and Sugriv could help Lord Ram. So Lord Ram was looking for Sugriv, and when Sugriv's men see, a king will always have people who are looking out in the kingdom to make sure that everything's going okay, but also to look out for potential enemies. So when Sugriv's men saw that two young, stout men were in the kingdom, they were worried. They became worried that this could be the men of Vali who have come to maybe attack. So then they sent Hanuman. Hanuman was under the jurisdiction of Vali at the time. And he sent Hanuman, And he sent Hanuman to find out more about these two young men. So Hanuman dressed up as a sage, as a rishi. He had the power to change his form. So he looked like a rishi, a sage, and he went to Ram and Lakshman, and they began to speak. And at that time, Hanuman didn't know that this was his Sri Ram, who he is an eternal servant of. So they had a very wonderful, beautiful interaction. And when he actually found, when Hanuman found out that this is my Lord, this is Lord Ram, he just melted. And he paid his dandavats, and the meeting was so affectionate, so warm, so loving. And then he took him to Sugriv's kingdom. And Sugriv and Ram, they met. And Sugriv put forward a proposal. And the proposal was that I can help you. You can scratch my back and I can scratch yours. I've lost my wife. I've lost my kingdom. If you help me to defeat Vali, then I will help you to get back your Sita. And then you can return to Ayodhya after your 14-year exile. And when Lord Ram heard this, Sugriv had great hopes. When Lord Ram heard this, he said, "No, I don't want this kind of a relationship." And then Sugriv was very downhearted. He was very sad, very sorry to hear this. And Lord Ram says, "I don't want a relationship which is based on give and take, which is based on business, which is based on you do something for me and therefore I do something for you. This is a relationship based on selfishness. I want a relationship of love. I want an exchange of love," said Lord Ram. "I want a relationship where there's no counting and there's no little black book where you note down what someone's done good for you and what someone's done bad for you. There's just love and there's just giving." And this was very inspirational. I found this very inspirational. I found this a very wonderful exhibition of the kind of loving interactions which, as Vaishnavas, we have to try and develop in order to really make a society, in order to really make a home for the devotees. It's described that Prabhupada built a house in which the whole world can live. But how can we actually invite people into a home, and we have to actually make it homely? And therefore, we have to have an environment where there's love, there's relationship, there's loving dealings, and devotees really look to serve one another. When Dhruva Maharaj was worshipping the Lord, he realized after his 6 months of deep austerity, when the Lord appeared to him, he realized that actually he'd been engaging in a business deal with the Lord. He described himself as a vanik, as a businessman. And he says, "Karchan vichinvan api divya ratnam swamin krithatusmin varam nayache." He says, "I was actually looking for broken glass, but I've gotten a jewel in the form of bhakti." So, this kind of devotional service and interaction with devotees, which is devoid of give and take, which is devoid of business, is very beautiful and is very attractive to anyone who comes into that fold. Yesterday, Lokanath Maharaj was, basically his class was a pastime. It was describing the beautiful pastime of when Lord Krishna was born, when he appeared, and when Vasudev took him from the jail in Mathura, Kamsa's jail, to Gokul. And he was describing lots of the intricate details. And as we meditate on these pastimes, it really purifies the consciousness. But more so, it helps us to meditate on the Lord. I was talking to one devotee recently, and he was mentioning one other devotee. And he was saying that he finds it very odd that in conversations, this devotee just talks about Krishna. He talks about Krishna's pastimes. He talks about Srimad Bhagavatam, or he talks about Chaitanya Charitamrita, or he talks about Ramayana, and he just starts talking about Krishna or the Lord. And this devotee was saying that he finds this very odd. And I was reflecting on this. And I was a little confused. I was wondering, why is it odd? And sometimes in our circles, maybe my circles, I don't know, it becomes odd to just talk about Krishna. Because we are a preaching movement and there's a lot to talk about in the realms of management, and there's a lot to talk about in the realms of where to go, what to do, etc. But sometimes, and I found in my own life, sometimes in the midst of all of that, you forget about the essence, you forget about Krishna. You forget about actually remembering the name, form, qualities and pastimes of Krishna. At a certain point in my sankirtan, I realized that I was actually... I felt everything was okay because I was taking shelter of Krishna. So I was trying to remember Krishna. I was praying to Krishna. I was chanting while I was out on the streets. And therefore I felt that everything was okay. Okay, I'm remembering Krishna. That's the essence of Krishna consciousness, is to always remember Krishna and to never forget Krishna. But I realized that after a certain while, I was having a conversation with a devotee, and it was I always remember that conversation. It was a few years ago. But it was a very important conversation because it made me realize that it isn't just about remembering Krishna, but it's actually remembering Krishna for the right reasons, in the right mood. What I realized is that I was remembering Krishna, but I was remembering him in order to do better in my sankirtan. because I knew that Krishna is very potent, and if you remember him, if you meditate on him, I found a direct correlation between remembrance and giving out more books. I found people were affected, because naturally Krishna is like a touchstone. If you remember him, he enters your consciousness, and that affects people's consciousness. But I realized that my motive wasn't pure. I still had a motive in remembering Krishna. And then I began to try and work to get rid of that motive, that actually Krishna just wants friendship. Krishna just wants relationship. He doesn't want it for the... He doesn't want it because it's a duty. He doesn't want me to remember him, to think of him, to worship him because it's a duty, ultimately. Of course, that's Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, that's how it begins. But he doesn't want it in order to for me to get something out of it. He wants it because he's Krishna, because we love him, because we want to love him, because we want to worship him, because we want to develop our relationship with him. So by remembering Krishna, by remembering his pastimes, by remembering his name, and by studying the Bhagavatam, various forms in which he comes, an affection develops in the heart. And this affection, which Devaki is exhibiting here, is what we all need in Krishna consciousness. By remembering his pastimes are very sweet. They allure the mind and heart. And that replaces Maya. Because for the conditioned soul, he's attracted to Maya. He's attracted to the illusory potency. But by meditating on, by discussing with the devotees, mat chitta mat kata prana, bodhyantasch, Chaparashparam. By meditating on Krishna's pastimes, we develop a sweetness and a connection and an affection for Krishna. And this is what we all need. So once there was in Jagannath Puri, or near Jagannath Puri, about 12 miles west of Jagannath Puri, there was a Lord Brahma, there was a hill in Satyayuga. And Lord Brahma began to meditate on this hill. He was meditating on Lord Narayan. And this hill, on this hill, Lord Narayan appeared to Lord Brahma, and Lord Narayan ordered Lord Brahma to create a deity of him. So that deity, that hill became known as Brahmagiri, and that deity eventually came under the custody of the Sri Vaishnavas. And we all know about the Alvars, great elevated souls in that line. And so this deity became known as Alvarnath. And over time, we now know him as Alarnath. So many great kings from Orissa, they would donate land, cows, jewels, emeralds, diamonds to this deity. So those who were serving the deity had great opulence. But as a family grew, the opulence had to be spread over a large number of people. And eventually, those who were serving the deity weren't able to maintain themselves. So often they'd have to go to nearby Jagannath Puri in order to beg or do some business in order to maintain their families. So once there was a man, his name was Sri Ketan, and he was serving the deity. And he had a son named Madhu. So on one occasion, he had to go to nearby Jagannath Puri for a few days in order to gain enough money to offer some basic boga to the deities and in order to maintain his family. So he put his boy in charge to offer to make the offerings to the deity. He put Madhu in charge. Now Madhu hadn't really been trained. He didn't really know what to do. He didn't really know how to offer to the Lord. So his mother made the daily sweet rice for the Lord, and she said to Madhu, "Okay, Madhu, go and offer this to the deity." So Madhu went in front of the deity, and he had seen his father on a few occasions make the offering. So he put the sweet rice in front of the deity, in front of the Lord of Alarnath. And he rung the bell and he chanted a few prayers in broken words. And then he went out, and after the allotted period of time, he went back in. But he saw that the sweet rice was still there. So he said to the Lord, "Why haven't you eaten the sweet rice?" He was disappointed. So then he said, "Okay, maybe I got the offering wrong." So then he got the bell, started ringing the bell, he chanted the mantras, and then he went back out. And a few minutes later, he came back in, and still the sweet rice was there. And then Madhu started crying. He started begging the Lord, please, please accept this offering. Accept this sweet rice. What have I done wrong? Please, Lord, accept this sweet rice. And he was crying and crying, really offering his heart when he was offering, making the offering, really giving his heart to the Lord. So then Madhu went out again, and after the allotted period of time, he went back in and he saw that the sweet rice had gone. So then he's very happy, and he went to his mother and he showed her the empty bowl, and he said, the Lord took, he showed her the empty bowl, and he just thought this was normal. The mother thought, where's the sweet rice? And Madhu said, the Lord ate the sweet rice. And she just thought, what are you talking about, you know, silly boy? You know, how can the Lord eat the sweet rice? See, they just had the understanding that the Lord can eat with his eyes, which is true, of course. But Madhu, being a simple boy, just had the understanding that if the Lord is eating the sweet rice, it means it's gone. So the mother thought that he's just greedy and he's taken the whole sweet rice to himself. So the next day again, she gave him the sweet rice. He offered it, and he offered it with such love and devotion. He thought, okay, I need to cry to make the Lord eat the sweet rice. So he started crying, and then he left, and he came back, and the sweet rice had gone. He took it back to his mother, and his mother really chastised him, said, you're eating the sweet rice yourself. And Madhu just thought nothing of it. So a few days later, his father came back, and the mother told the father. She told Sri Ketan that actually, this boy, you need to really chastise him, because every day he's been eating the sweet rice himself, and here I am going hungry. And actually, they were both just starving for a few days. So Sri Ketan, he told Madhu off, and Madhu insisted. He said, Father, I'm serious. The Lord is eating the sweet rice. So Sri Ketan, he said, okay, let me see. So he hid behind the curtain, and Madhu made the offering, and he just cried and cried, and then he left. And then the Lord came off the altar, and Sri Ketan was watching this. The father was watching this. The Lord came off the altar, and he took the sweet rice, and it was warm sweet rice, hot sweet rice. And the Lord started drinking the sweet rice. And before the Lord could actually drink, Sri Ketan came, and he snatched the sweet rice out of the Lord's hands. And he was just so much absorbed in this consciousness that the Lord is just stone. He was a smarta brahmana, in essence, just worshipping the deity in order to maintain his family. And he just snatched the sweet rice out of his hands. And he said, what are you doing? This is my family's food. You know, you can't eat this sweet rice. Go back, you know, where you belong, you know, on the altar. And then Lord Narayan, he went back. And actually, some of the sweet rice had spilt onto his hand and burnt his hand. And the Lord returned to the altar. And there was a sound. There was a voice. And the voice cursed Sri Ketan. He said, because of your measly, your miserly mentality even, your whole family and this whole village will die apart from Madhu, the young boy. So a short time later, there was a huge tidal wave and it wiped out the whole village apart from Madhu. Madhu was saved. So to this day, that deity is there. Has anyone been there to Alarnath? And this very beautiful deity. And actually, during the Rath Yatra, all year round, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in his 18 years in Jagannath Puri, he would visit and he would take darshan of Lord Jagannath. But in between Snan Yatra and the Rath Yatra, Lord Jagannath is not available for darshan because he's sick and he's recovering. So during this period, Lord Chaitanya would go to Alarnath and spend those couple of weeks there and take darshan of the Alarnath deity. So it's a very beautiful deity where we can get darshan. But this pastime really shows us how love and devotion really purchases the Lord. Once there was a king, again in Jagannath Puri, or in Orissa at least, and he was sending lots of wonderful gifts for Lord Jagannath, for the deity. He was sending, again, gold, diamonds, emeralds, jewels. Lots of wonderful gifts. And the daughter of the king saw her father giving so many wonderful gifts for the pleasure of the Lord. And she thought to herself, what can I give? What can I give to Lord Jagannath? So she's just thinking and thinking. And then she thought of something. And she, her gift, she put in a nice little box. And she gave it to one of the pandas of Lord Jagannath, and asked him to send it to the king. So she, alongside that, she gave 7 gold coins, just as a gift for the panda, for the service. So the panda was wondering, what is in this box? If she's given me 7 gold coins, then the contents of the box must be very valuable. So along the way, the panda became curious, and he thought, maybe inside is some, you know, amazing jewels, and maybe I can take them for myself. So he opened the box, and he just saw a piece of paper. And he didn't even bother to read what was on the piece of paper, so he just threw the piece of paper away, he threw the box away, and thought, that's a load of rubbish. You know, what's the point? What would the Lord get from this? So then he carried on, and that night he had a dream. And in the dream, Lord Jagannath came. And rather than having a big smiley face like we're used to, Lord Jagannath was looking really angry. And he started to slap him. He started to slap the panda. And he said, how dare you? That box belonged to me. It was for me. How dare you tamper with the box? How dare you throw it away? So when the panda actually got to Jagannath Puri, there was a whole commotion going on. And he tried to find out what was happening. And when he got inside the temple, there was a piece of paper on Lord Jagannath's chest. And everyone was wondering, who would put a piece of paper on Lord Jagannath's chest? Who would dare to do this? The worship is very strict of Lord Jagannath. So everyone was wondering what was happening. So the panda came along and said, oh, it's okay. I can explain everything. And he went and he saw, and it was the same piece of paper. And he explained to everyone the whole story, that there was a little girl, she'd given a box, he was curious, he saw it was a piece of paper, so he threw it away, and that night he had a dream. So everyone was pacified. And when the panda saw the piece of paper, he read it. And on the piece of paper, the little girl had written that you've given your heart to the gopis, so you don't have a heart anymore, so I'd like to give my heart to you. So she wrote she'd drawn a little heart. On the paper. So this pastime was nice because somehow we have to give our hearts to Krishna. Somehow we have to, they say that we have to become soft-hearted, so soft-hearted that at some point, soft like butter, our hearts have to become soft like butter, because at some point Krishna will come and he will steal our hearts away. But we see that practically this can be done. Practically, we can make our heart soft like this, as well as continue on with the preaching mission and whatever we need to do. We see this in the life of Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada was, as hard and strong as a thunderbolt, but at the same time as soft as a rose. Sometimes he would really chastise his disciples, but that was on the basis of great affection. The basis of his loving, of his dealings, was love and affection. Once, Malati Machaji was describing that she was serving Prabhupada in Mayapur. And on one occasion, Prabhupada had invited many, many godbrothers to come. And they were discussing many things. They were talking mainly in Bengali, so she didn't really understand what they were saying. But they were having very, you know, deep discussions. And Prabhupada had asked her to cook. And when she had finished the cooking, it was time for lunch, it was time for everyone to have their meal, but there was no one to serve. So Prabhupada asked her to serve. And when everyone was discussing, they were talking, and when she came in to serve, the room was silent. All this discussion stopped. She was Western-bodied. American, had a lifestyle which maybe wasn't so sattvic in the past. She was a lady. She was Brahmin initiated, and Prabhupada had pioneered in so many ways in giving ladies Brahmin initiation, in allowing them to be on the altar and do so many other, and give them positions of prominence within his movement. And they couldn't connect with this. They couldn't connect with the changes that Prabhupada had made. So when she came into the room, there was just a coldness, which. Shishirada Gokulananda ki. Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shishi Gornitai ki, Srila Prabhupada ki. So there's a coldness which entered into the room. And everyone was feeling very uncomfortable with the fact that Malati Machi was serving them. So when she had done the first serving, she left the room. And Prabhupada looked around, and on purpose he spoke in English so that she could hear. And he said, "She's very dedicated to me. And she would cut her throat for me, and I would cut my throat for her." And I thought this was such a powerful statement. You see, because Prabhupada, he could have tried to save face. He could have tried to explain that there was no one else to do it. Or he could have said, "Well, I'm just trying to encourage her." But he showed this strong love and affection for Malati Machi in the presence of his godbrothers. Some of them were senior to him. And when Malati Machi heard this, she just broke down. She just started to cry. And she said, on this basis, her and many others just gave their hearts, they gave their lives to Prabhupada because he showed such great affection, such love for his devotees, for his disciples. He purchased them with this love. Once there was a boy, and his father would take him to school every day. And in order to go to school, they'd have to go through the forest. One day, the father took the boy to school, and on his way back, a lion came, and he killed the father and ate him. So now there was no one to take the boy to school. So his mother was very worried, because the boy would be going to school alone. He'd be going through the dangerous jungle. How could he be safe? But there was no other option. In order to be educated, that's what he had to do. So the boy went to school. But he was really scared. He was scared of going through the jungle. So he called out to the Lord. He said, Gopal, please, take me to school. Can you help me? Can you come with me? Can you accompany me to school? So because he was asking with such love and devotion, Gopal came. And he held his hand and he took the boy to school. And he felt very bad. On one level, the boy was feeling very bad because he was asking the Lord for such a favor. And he thought the Lord must be so busy doing so many other things. He had heard that the Lord is very busy. He has so many duties in Vrindavan and so many other duties within the world. So he's feeling a bit shy. But he said, when he got to school, then he said, "How about when I go home? You know, I think I need someone to take me when I go home as well." So Gopal said, "Sure, I'll come. I'll come and take you home as well." So after school, the boy came out and there was Gopal. He was waiting for him, so they walked home. And this went on for a number of days. Gopal was always there to take the boy to school and to bring him home. Now one day, they were going to do Ganesh Puja at school. So everyone was asked to bring an offering, and they were asked to bring quite a large offering so that everyone could get a piece of the offering. So the boy went to his mother and he said, "Tomorrow we're doing Ganesh Puja and I need some offering. I need something that I can give to everyone. So something which is big enough so that everyone can have a piece." And the mother just looked and she said, "I don't have anything to give to you. You know, we're not rich enough to give anything. We don't have the means." So the boy was really sad. So then he went, and on his way to school, he asked Gopal, he asked Krishna. Well, he's just telling him that, you know, today's Ganesh Puja, and I don't have anything to give. And everyone's going to look at me, and my teacher might tell me off, and you know, I'm worried, I'm sad. Do you have anything, Gopal? And Gopal just looked at him and he said, "I don't think I've got anything either. I've only got this pot of milk, but it's pretty small. But at least you'll have something." So then the little boy said, "Okay, well, at least I'll have something." So he took the pot of milk. And when they got to school, he gave it to the teacher. And everyone else had brought huge offerings. They were from richer families and they were much better equipped. So the teacher just looked at this small pot of milk and she said, "What is this? This is useless." And she just took the pot of milk and she said to the boy, "This is useless." So she just poured it onto the floor. And she poured it. And she carried on pouring and pouring and pouring. And it was like a bottomless milk, like Draupadi's Akshaypatra. It just didn't stop. It kept coming. The milk kept coming and kept coming and kept coming. And the teacher was amazed. And she said, "Where did you get this milk from? Where did you get this pot of milk from?" And then the boy said, "Well, Gopal comes." And she said, "Who's Gopal?" She said, "Gopal is Krishna." And she said, "What do you mean, Krishna?" She said, "Krishna, God, Krishna, he comes and he takes me to school and he takes me home." And she was incredulous. She didn't believe him. She didn't believe that Krishna was coming to take the little boy home from school and taking him to school. So then she, at the end of school, she came and she saw and she was observing. And Gopal was, the little boy was walking home, but she couldn't see Gopal because she didn't have the faith. She didn't have the faith to see Gopal. But the boy, because he had faith, he understood. He could see that Gopal was with him and Gopal had given him the pot of milk. So in this way, if we can somehow really give our hearts to Krishna and really worship him, and of course, like Devaki, we have to worship Krishna. In the conditioned state, we have to worship Krishna in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. That's according to rules and regulations. It's like if you're riding a bike, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is like having stabilizers. So you're riding a bike, but you have two additional wheels to make sure that the bike stays straight while you're learning to ride the bike. In the same way, Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti helps us because we don't have a spontaneous desire. We don't have an attraction towards serving Krishna. So we have rules and regulations which make sure that we do what we're meant to do in order to stay on track. But like Devaki, she is engaging in Aishwarya, she's engaging in Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, but at the same time, she has an affection towards the Lord. So at the same time as following the rules and regulations, we have to slowly, by reading and hearing and meditating on the pastimes of Krishna, we have to develop an affection towards the Lord and develop a personal attraction towards Krishna. And in this way, our chanting and our relationship with Krishna can become richer and deeper. I've been told that I should leave time for questions in classes, because I often don't. So are there any comments or questions from anyone?